higher education can be a transformative experience for many young people, but sadly not all Australian students are safe and secure. Research has found that 1 in 20 students report experiencing sexual assault in a university context. Now, new legislation that came into effect last week changes how universities deal with sexual violence. Under the mandatory National Higher Education Code to prevent and respond to gender-based violence, universities will be compelled to prevent and respond to gender-based violence and enforce compliance with national standards and requirements. Institutions will also have to provide both complainants and those accused with support plans, and non-disclosure agreements will be prohibited unless requested by a complainant. So will this new code make a real difference in the lives of Australian students? Rosina Yadav is the founder of the Young Women's Alliance, a research and representative organisation for women. I spoke with her earlier.
Thank you for having me.
Now, most Australian universities already have mandatory policies for preventing and responding to gender-based violence. Why is this new code necessary?
I think we've seen that despite years of awareness campaigns, sexual violence is pervasive in Australian universities, and at the same time, it's vastly underreported, and the previous approaches were fragmented and voluntary. So complaints were handled internally with inconsistent outcomes. Survivors had really bad outcomes in terms of feeling dissatisfied and unsupported, and universities weren't amenable to the feedback that they were getting. So this will ensure that that changes by providing stronger incentives, external scrutiny, and better support for victim survivors.
What are the incentives? What happens if a university is found to be non-compliant, and who makes that assessment?
So the code includes several structures that will result in things being overseen. We have 7 standards across leadership and governance, safe campus environments and systems, education and training, support for survivors, safe processes, data and transparency, and safe student accommodation. There's a dedicated gender-based violence reform branch in the Department of Education that is going to monitor and enforce compliance, and that includes penalties that range from remedial compliance notices to civil fines with actual, you know, monetary implications. And then there's also something in the code that means that federal funding status can be jeopardized, and that means that there's a strong financial incentive alongside a reputational one for universities to make sure they do the right thing.
Sexual violence could take place off campus. It could involve someone who's not a student. How does the new code address the complexity there?
Yeah, so the code focuses on whole of organisation coverage in that, you know, universities must apply GBV prevention and response efforts across all areas of operation and community. So that means off-campus incidents are explicitly included. If a student or staff experiences gender-based violence, the university must respond regardless of where it occurs or who the perpetrator is. And historically, we've seen that many sexual assaults involving students happened off campus, at off-site parties, private residences, field trips, or in residential colleges that claimed autonomy. And before, universities could say, this is not our issue. But now, if it involves a student or staff, the institution has to act. And this means there are no safe havens for misconduct. And it really pushes accountability into every corner of student life.
On Radio National Breakfast, I'm speaking with Rosina Yadav, the founder of the Young Women's Alliance. We're talking about a new code for universities regarding gender-based violence. Rosina, how does this code interact with reports that a victim of gender-based violence may want to make to police?
So it encourages reporting crimes to police where appropriate with the survivor's consent, but there's no explicit clause forcing reporting to police, and that's part of respecting the survivor's autonomy. But universities should offer to help the victim go to police and have processes so that criminal and campus processes can run without impeding each other. And one of the important aspects of the code was around ensuring that there are several multiple reporting options. So that includes informal disclosure, seeking support without triggering investigation, and then also a formal report, which means requesting action. So these distinct paths exist, and the policy within the institution has to explain both clearly and then do so with anonymous and confidential reporting tools available.
Under the code, non-disclosure agreements will be prohibited unless they are requested by the complainant. What's your understanding of how common a non-disclosure agreement is?
So non-disclosure agreements have been used by universities in the past and also by other institutions to reduce, any risks of being talked about poorly in the media, and they've placed victim survivors in an uncomfortable situation. So we see them used from time to time dependent on how reputationally aware and risk averse the institution is. So this is an important measurement that is being taken, and it ensures that victim survivors can both pursue the accommodations that they need while also respecting their freedom of speech, because sometimes we see contingency scenarios where in exchange for silence, support and or academic continuity is provided. So being able to remove that is crucial.
Now, the reforms require all job applicants to universities to disclose whether they've been investigated for any allegations, regardless of whether or not those have been proven. Is that fair?
I think so. And, the caveat that is made under that is that, that's information that the university can seek. But if it is shown that, one, there has been an investigation, and then two, that the investigation determined that the person had engaged in something known to be gender-based violence, then that is something the university will consider. It is not an automatic exclusion. It does not rule them out completely from employment. And, given the fact that universities exist with power hierarchies, with, significant dynamics in terms of older and younger people and with vulnerable populations, we need that information to ensure that we're serving those students better. It also addresses a problem that occurred previously where sometimes universities would come across a bad actor and then sort of pass them off to another institution. Here we have transparent information available, and then universities can make the best action with that information.
If the allegation, though, wasn't proven, is it fair to ask that person to disclose that?
Yes, because I think it's still part of ensuring that complete information is available, that why did that occur? And then that sort of information gathering and context gathering can occur. And irrespective, it's not going to eliminate that person from getting a position, and they will receive the chance to explain properly. And if there was a determination that that actual action did not take place, it wasn't proven, then of course they have that element of procedural fairness on their side.
But surely if someone was accused and the accusation wasn't found to be substantiated, they're not at liberty to discuss the details of that. That would be a breach of privacy of the person making the complaint.
Yes, but I think to some extent we have to recognize the complexity in these cases, that sometimes what occurs is, it may not have reached a certain legal standard or a certain civil standard in terms of the balance of probabilities, but that information around whether there was an allegation in the first place can be useful information. And the fact that it doesn't eliminate someone from being hired it's more contextual information that can be utilized is important. So if implemented properly, if not treated as a tick box exercise, and if resourced appropriately with the regulator actually taking action when there are breaches or things aren't adequate, this could be significant and genuinely life-changing for many students and make our universities and educational spaces safe and responsive as they need to be.
Rosina Yadav, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Rosina Yadav is the founder of the Young Women's Alliance.